Hey humans, want to optimize your health with real data? Sifox Health offers the easiest, most affordable blood biomarker testing kits. Test 17 key biomarkers like cholesterol and inflammation from the comfort of your own home without a doctor's order. Get 20% off at sifoxhealth.com/yami. That's sifoxhealth.com/yami. Know your biomarkers and live healthier.
Mercury is a very harmful neurotoxin, and it's plentiful in seafoods. You know, we have a lot of discharge from factories and coal plants and things like that. All of the type of waste that ends up going into the ocean, eventually sea creatures, including fish, will absorb this through the water and accumulate these in their fatty tissues.
You are here for a reason, but navigating this human life can be challenging. How do you care for your body, mind, and spirit to make the most of your time here on Earth? How can you harness your incredible human potential? In this podcast, we explore these questions and more to help you craft your best life yet. Welcome to I Am Human. Hello, humans. I am your host, Dr. Yami, and I am thrilled to be with you today. Thank you for being here with me. And thank you so much for tuning in again to I Am Human. If you are new, welcome. I would love it if you subscribe to my show on your favorite podcast platform, if you left me a review and a rating, and if you shared this with somebody else that you think might benefit. I appreciate you so much. To be human means to have the ability to understand and interpret research, and to use that to draw a conclusion. It also means that humans have the ability to change their take on a topic. And today we're going to be talking about omega-3 fatty acid supplementation with Dr. Tim Radak. Dr. Radak is a dietitian who has worked in leadership and administration for a variety of public health-related nonprofit organizations, ranging from cancer prevention and research to health promotion and nutrition. He has taught graduate-level courses for over a decade in both campus-based and distance learning environments. Prior to joining Walden University, Dr. Radak served as assistant professor at Appalachian State University and director of the Graduate Dietetic Program. He has published articles in a number of national and international peer-reviewed journals, written textbook chapters, and contributed to and participated in television, radio, and newsprint media as an expert on various public health and nutrition topics. He has been credentialed as a registered dietitian nutritionist since 2000. Dr. Radak serves as a board member for the Human Ecology Project UK, and he has been a faculty member at Walden College of Health Professions since 2010, teaching public health courses in both the PhD and MPH programs before becoming the academic program coordinator for the PhD in public health program. And in this episode of I Am Human, we talk about his plant-based journey, how he ended up doing this. And then we start going into omega-3 fatty acid supplementation, because it's something that I heard him talk about when I heard him talk at the Plant-Based Prevention of Disease Conference, which I also talked at in June of 2024. So I really was interested in having him on the show to talk about this issue of omega-3 fatty acids. Do we need to supplement omega-3 DHA EPA? What are the benefits, if there are any? What are the potential harms? What are the pros and cons? What does the research show? What do the data show? And Dr. Radak has been studying this for 20 years. So he is an expert in this topic. We talk about the history of omega-3 fatty acid supplementation. How did it even start that it became recommended? The back and forth in that. We talk about the pathway conversion, the ALA to DHA EPA. We talk about omega-6 and omega-3 fatty acids. We talk about algal oil and should we be supplementing with that in the plant-based community. So I think it's a really good conversation, and I hope that you'll listen take it in, and then determine for yourself if you're already supplementing with algal oil as a plant-based eater, if it's something that you want to continue or if you want to reconsider that path. So thank you for listening to this episode. I really appreciate it, and I appreciate you. I hope you have a very plantastic day and that you enjoy this episode. The information on this podcast is for informational and educational purposes only. It is not meant to replace careful evaluation and treatment. If you have concerns about your health or well-being, please consult a healthcare professional. Dr. Tim Radak, welcome to I Am Human. What a pleasure to have you today.
Thank you for having me, and I look forward to a nice conversation with you today.
Well, it was a pleasure to meet you at the Plant-Based Prevention of Disease Conference recently, and you did a really great job on your talk, and I just thought you would be a fantastic guest, and you're very enthusiastic to speak on a couple of topics that I think are going to be very, very valuable to my listeners. But before we get into the nitty-gritty of science and nerd out and all that, I'd love to just hear your story and your journey. Tell us about your plant-based journey. How did you discover plant-based nutrition? How did you get to where you are today?
I think I got my first dose of nutrition by actually following my parents. You know, they were interested in the 1980s with a few healthy diets from some diet books like the Pritikin diet and the McDougall diet. So that kind of gave me a little bit of exposure that maybe some of the things that I'm eating in my regular standard American diet may not be the best for me. And I may not be able to feel that right at that time in my youth, but projecting forward down the road, that could be a health issue. So I started to explore a little bit about the influence of diet and disease. And, you know, what I wanted to test is really whether a plant-based diet had any validity or merit to reducing chronic disease, and particularly cardiovascular disease, because my grandmother succumbed to cardiovascular disease. And she had a triple bypass surgery, which, as you know, is literally taking, you know, an artery from the leg and reattaching that to up in the heart area, which is very, very drastic, very aggressive kind of surgery. And eventually she would succumb to that. And I was asking myself the question, you know, did that have to happen? You know, did she have to succumb to such a horrific disease and a disease that took many, many years of her life away? You know, the times that she could spend with her family and grandchildren, all of that disappeared. And so I was really trying to focus in, you know, did it have to be that way? And is there anything we could do within our lifestyle that perhaps could have reduced that or even eliminated that? So I did a little bit of research. I had been living in Japan, teaching English for several years. And I knew that when I got back to the States, I wanted to focus on a degree that had to do with nutrition and health. And so I ended up pursuing my master's degree and my doctoral degree at Loma Linda University. And they're really the originators and leaders in vegetarian nutrition. The Adventists themselves abstain as a rule of thumb from animal products, and several of the biggest and largest prospective epidemiological studies came out of Loma Linda. And so I thought, why not go to the experts? Let me put this to the test. Let me learn from those that have investigated this particular diet and see what I come up with. And so that's really what started my journey. And along the way, I also took on a registered dietitian credential. So I'm registered as a registered dietitian nutritionist for about 20 plus years. And so that's really kind of what started my journey into the plant-based world. And what I found was there is a lot of merit. There is a lot of validity to following a whole foods, plant-based diet. And conversely, following the standard American diet has a lot of deleterious health effects. Particularly, the latest research suggests that up to 60% of the American diet is now composed of processed and ultra-processed foods. So there's a lot of reworking that needs to be done. But one thing's for sure, the plant-based diet seems to excel and rise above all other dietary patterns for reducing risk and also preventing disease.
I love how you really took that scientific approach. And I'm curious about this. I've had good foundation from my own parents, but then also seeing how it's affected some of my family members. What does the science really show? I'm going to study this. And so you really have. And you are the person that can really look at some of these studies and tell us some of the details. So one of the things that you were excited to talk about, which is something that I'm very interested in personally as well, is the issue of omega-3 fatty acids. Because it's definitely, it seems like it's always in the news. It's good for you. It's not good for you. Definitely also in the longevity community, there's a lot of talk about omega-3s. But let's talk about the history of omega-3 fatty acid supplementation, what the current evidence is showing about whether we should be supplementing omega-3 fatty acids, and what you think are the pros and cons of looking at supplementing this.
Let me first take a step back a little bit about why I decided to investigate omega-3 fatty acids or just essential fatty acids in general. And, you know, this was around the late 1990s, the early 2000 timeframe. I was in graduate school and there was a humongous push for fish oil supplements. And the belief at that time was that this really can reduce cardiovascular disease. And that was massive because what's our top killer back then and our top killer right now? It's still cardiovascular disease. We have 500,000 individuals who die in this country alone. So as I was in graduate school, at the same time investigating vegetarian diets, it obviously became apparent that, well, if vegetarians don't consume fish or fish oil supplements, are they at a disadvantage? And at that juncture, there had not been and still isn't any rationale for consuming any animal products in a diet for health. And so this was a really interesting research question because some of this research was suggesting you need to have fish, you need to consume fish oil supplements if you want to reduce your risk of cardiovascular disease. And this is also before algae supplements and things like that had come on board. So it was a very perplexing question. And that sent me into several deep dives over the last couple decades to investigate the merit of fish or fish oil supplements. So that's kind of a little bit of why I decided to go in and explore this a little bit. But we can go back to roughly 1929. That's when essential fatty acids were first discovered. There were biochemists Evans and Burr. And they found through their studies that there were two particular fatty acids that cannot be synthesized from other fats in the diet. This is similar to essential amino acids, where we need to directly take them in from the outside. The body's just not able to synthesize those. And so those were omega-3 fatty acids and omega-6 fatty acids. And it's really the primary fatty acid, which for omega-3 is alpha-linolenic acid, and for omega-6 is linolenic acid. So in about roughly the 1940s, another scientist by the name of Sinclair went over to Greenland to study the Inuit Eskimo population. And he was convinced at that time that their diet, which was mostly comprised of whale blubber and fish and other seafoods, protected against atherosclerosis and other Western diseases. And so he theorized that the main reason for this was actually omega-3 fatty acids, and that they were responsible for the protective effects. And there was about one or two epidemiological studies back then that found that heart attacks were about 10 times lower in the Greenland Inuit Eskimo population than in the Danish population in Denmark. And so while he was over there, he decided to eat like an Inuit Eskimo. And so he ate for, I think it was about 100 days, that standard diet. And then he took some blood tests on himself and he discovered that, well, one of the biggest discoveries was his bleeding time. His bleeding time increased almost eightfold. So nowadays we would consider that kind of a risk factor, if anything. But at that time, that was something that was probably considered positive in his eyes. And then other lipid indicators like VLDL, very low lipoprotein, density lipoproteins were also lower. So this helped support his belief and theory that it was omega-3 fatty acids that were responsible for the cardioprotective effect of that particular diet. And then in the 1970s, two famous researchers, Bang and Dieberg, they also went to Greenland to study more about omega-3 fatty acids. And they took just a small handful of Inuit Eskimos to look at their dietary intake. And what they found is that the intake of omega-3 fatty acids was much, much more than in the Danish counterparts, something in the magnitude of 14 grams compared to 3 grams. And then also at the same time, when those Greenland Inuit Eskimos migrated over to Denmark, there was an increase in cardiovascular disease. So this is what really kind of launched the research trying to link omega-3 fatty acids with cardiovascular disease. And so another epidemiological study came out in 1980, which also suggested that cardiovascular disease among the Inuit Eskimos is almost unknown. And so off we went, you know, the train left the station and there was this massive mushrooming and ballooning of research, not just for cardiovascular disease, but also for just about every disease that I can think of has been investigated in relationship to omega-3 fatty acids, mostly because they have an anti-inflammatory effect. And many chronic diseases have an inflammation component to it. So it was logical that that was explored. So that's kind of how that origination kind of began. However, about 10 years ago, several researchers decided to take a closer look at that original research, looking at Greenland Inuit Eskimos. And they basically, when they reviewed reports of cardiovascular death and mortality in Greenland, what they found is that about one third of the population lives in rural areas where there usually isn't even a physician. So when Greenland Inuit Eskimos died, typically the reporting was they died of natural causes. And back at that time, they also didn't have diagnostic tools to assess cardiovascular disease. So it really kind of gave this suggestion that cardiovascular disease mortality in Greenland was significantly lower. What we now know, you know, is cardiovascular disease is definitely there in Greenland and as much and sometimes more than in Western countries like the US and Canada, and that they have a higher incidence of cerebral vascular stroke. Their overall mortality is twice as high as their non-Eskimo counterparts, and their life expectancy is about 10 years shorter. So this kind of effectively disproved this hypothesis that the cardiovascular effects of omega-3 fatty acids are what were purported to reduce incidence in Greenland. But like I said, the train left the station and researchers were fast at work trying to investigate more linkages, but also at the same time, supplement companies were really trying to push this. And physicians as well. You know, it's very common for the general population to go see their doctor and say, well, you look like you may have high blood pressure or you have high triglycerides. You should take a fish oil supplement. So it was widely promoted. There was lots of lobbying efforts that were there to really just build this almost giant machine to keep pushing for fish oil supplements. So that's kind of a little bit about the history of how things got started.
And yeah, it is confusing, I will say, because I'm a pediatrician. So in pediatrics, there are formal recommendations for pregnant women and children to under the age of 2 for DHA supplementation specifically. But talk a little bit about currently for different disease processes. So the number one is cardiovascular disease. What is right. The evidence showing? Is it really benefiting us? And I know that a recent study showed that it may increase the risk of atrial fibrillation, but atrial fibrillation is super high in the older population anyway. So is that something that we should be worried about, especially for people that might have been recommended to supplement? And then maybe a couple of other disease processes that we know that it has been recommended for, if you could just talk a little bit more about that.
So first, you know, we began with observational studies that were looking at the amount of omega-3 fatty acids and indices like triglycerides and also mortality. And there were several associations that were positive for omega-3 fatty acid intake as well as fish intake. But again, these are observational studies. And what I think was happening at the time, this was also around the 1980s, and there was a big, strong promotion in the United States to reduce our red meat intake. because of its association with cardiovascular disease. So we were told to reduce our saturated fat, we were told to reduce our cholesterol, and choose other animal proteins instead. So that's where the white choose white meat, you know, over red meat kind of suggesting came along, but also to consume fish. And so what I think what was happening is there's what we call kind of a replacement effect, where fish was given kind of a higher level of disease protection simply because it was replacing something that was already much unhealthier. And so those who consume fish, actually fish is a marker of an overall healthy lifestyle. So when individuals are saying, oh, I'm going to shun red meat, I'm going to eat fish for better health, they're also doing a lot of other things in their lifestyle that come along for the ride. So that's why some of the observational studies are really not good indicators. And there's actually several of them, studies that came out that were observational that increased all-cause mortality and strokes. But what we're really looking at is outcome measures. And so what do the outcomes show? And probably the best compilation of research looking at fish oil and fish in total is systematic reviews, and Cochrane systematic reviews is probably the most authoritative and objective when they do reviews. They're extremely lengthy. They're very exhaustive. And so they did a review on this topic because there's so much interest in this. And this was the most extensive review to date. And what they found is increasing EPA or DHA had little to no effect on mortality and cardiovascular health. And they mentioned that there's evidence that taking omega-3 supplements do not reduce heart disease, stroke, or death. And there was little evidence for the effects of fish. So even though you can find a study here or a study there, we want to look at the preponderance of studies in aggregate overall. And supplementation does not pan out. And as you mentioned, with atrial fibrillation, there's also significant risks associated with taking fish oil supplements. And there is enough data now to have a meta-analysis of studies from long-term omega-3 fatty acid supplementation or from fish. And they found to increase atrial fibrillation. And even the Framington Health Study found a 6 times increase in atrial fibrillation for those consuming dark fish like salmon, mackerel, and sardines greater than 4 times a week. And there's also a study actually done with angina patients who were given either fish or fish oil supplements. And both of those groups increased cardiac death, and even more so for sudden cardiac death with fish oil supplements. And then lastly, there was a systematic review that looked at type 2 diabetes and tried to find associations between different macronutrients. And what they found is that actually it was alpha-linolenic acid and linolenic acid, our main omega-3 and omega-6 fatty acids, that were actually protective for diabetes, and that EPA and DHA did not have any effects. So that kind of gives you a little bit of a background in terms of what the available evidence demonstrates and then what some of the risks are. And some of these risks are relatively new. For example, atrial fibrillation is a relatively new finding. And so this is not translated over to the population. Many physicians are still not aware of this. And because the emphasis is so massive in taking fish oil supplements for reducing cardiovascular disease, that's just been reinforced and reinforced. Lobbying efforts for submissions to the FDA for health claims have been made by supplement companies. I mean, this is a multi-billion-dollar industry, the top seller of vitamin supplements after the multivitamin supplement, which is number one. Fish oil supplements remain number two. So it's a massive industry with lots and lots of players and lots of money to be made.
Yeah, it's hard to separate the facts sometimes whenever you have big interests and biases there. So you really have to tread carefully when you're looking at these studies. Tell me a little bit about heavy metals. So one of the things that we're always concerned about with fish, and particularly fish oil, because it can get even more concentrated, is mercury. So what information do you have on that?
Yeah, mercury is a very harmful neurotoxin, and it's plentiful in seafoods. You know, we have a lot of discharge from factories and coal plants and things like that, all of the type of waste that ends up going into the ocean, eventually sea creatures, including fish, will absorb this through the water and accumulate these in their fatty, you know, fatty tissues. So it was well known that consuming fish heightened your risk for, you know, ingesting mercury. And even the U.S. government, who still recommends eating seafood several times a week, it's very careful to mention for women who are pregnant or are about to be pregnant not to consume certain types of fish because of their high mercury concentrations. And there's been some studies also looking at cognitive performance in young adults and youth and children, suggesting that consuming fish because of those pollutants adds a greater risk for cognitive dysfunction. And it's not just mercury. There's all types of other things circulating around in the ocean that fish, unfortunately, are on the receiving end is. And one of them is microplastics. So add just another insult. And then the declining fish populations. You know, the way we fish today is we take giant trawler nets and basically just carpet the entire floor of the ocean to be able to get fish and then dump everything else. It's a horrendous practice. And so what we've done is depleted many, many fish stocks around the world. So there's an environmental question to be asked about whether to consume fish or fish oil supplements. So, you know, that's something to think about too.
Yeah. So one of the things to think about, is it benefiting us? Sounds like maybe not. Sounds like the evidence is showing, no, it's not really doing what we thought it was and what we've been pushing for decades. Then the second question is, could it be harming us? And it sounds like, yes, potentially it could be, especially when there's contamination from heavy metals and increasing the risk of atrial fibrillation, those kinds of things. Let's take Absolutely. A step back and talk about the different forms of omega-3, because you mentioned something earlier that when it came to the alpha-linolenic acid, the ALA, that higher consumption of that seems to actually be protective. And for plant-based eaters, that's something that we can easily acquire through our food, walnuts and chia seeds and hemp seeds and even leafy greens. So maybe just let's take a step back and talk about the differences and how that conversion works from the ALA to the DHA and EPA, and why that can be a little bit confusing too if levels might be low.
Yeah, and it's definitely confusing for health practitioners too, because we get so much varied information. Even as a registered dietitian, some of our professional magazines and journals are rife with the promotion of fish oil supplements, as well as the need for plant-based diet consumers to also make sure they have a reliable source. And so, you know, certainly fish and fatty fish in particular, and oysters, are a rich source of long-chain fatty acids like EPA and DHA. And of course, fish don't have those naturally. They get that from the algae that they consume and plankton. And like you mentioned, things like walnuts, chia, flax, soy are rich sources of omega-3 fatty acids, but also things like black lentils, navy beans, kidney beans, soybeans are all very large sources of omega-3 fatty acids. But, you know, those are the ones that stand out. And those are the ones that people look at when they want to increase their omega-3 fatty acid intakes. But fortunately, nature has provided a widespread incorporation of omega-3 fatty acids throughout the terrestrial world. Even eating raspberries and blackberries, if you chew those seeds, you're going to release essential fatty acids in there too. And so to try to understand this a little bit better, I put together a basic dietary plan for one day, a breakfast, a lunch, and a dinner, to see whether just following a plant-based diet would even meet the adequate intakes for omega-3 fatty acids. And what I found is they actually exceed them significantly for both genders, male and female. So even though you can find chia or flax, some of these, or walnuts, even without those super rich intakes of omega-3 fatty acids, you can easily meet your intake levels. And the government actually found that there wasn't sufficient evidence to have an RDA, a recommended daily allowance, or an estimated average requirement. They just have an adequate intake level, which is about 1 to 1.7 grams a day, depending on your gender. And they found that, you know, population data suggests that, you know, we're meeting that across the board. And what they also found is there isn't enough evidence to support having any recommendation for EPA or DHA at all. So it's just an adequate intake for our omega-3 fatty acid, alpha-linolenic, and on omega-6 side, linolenic acid. So that's kind of, you know, some of the sources and what some of the recommendations are.
Hi, humans. You know that I'm passionate about using habits and behaviors to optimize health, well-being, and longevity, and I'm pretty sure you are too. But when you're ready to start optimizing your health and well-being, it helps to have objective data so that you can determine if you're headed in the right direction. I'm all about the data because I want to know what's happening inside of my body. And you know what's even better? To be able to obtain this data when I want in a convenient and affordable way without needing a doctor's prescription. SciFox Health has pioneered a novel approach to create the most comprehensive, most convenient, and least expensive at-home blood test on the market. They are the easiest, most affordable way to check your blood biomarkers. They give you the ability to test 17 critical blood biomarkers in a single at-home kit. It's easy to use and offered at an incredibly low price. It's clinically accurate, and you don't need a doctor's order to obtain it. For those of us interested in our cardiovascular and metabolic health, the kit includes total cholesterol, triglycerides, HDL, LDL, ApoB, apolipoprotein A1, hemoglobin A1C, and it even includes high-sensitivity CRP, which is a marker of inflammation. ApoB is now being recognized as an important indicator of cardiovascular health, and most doctors are not yet routinely ordering it. SciFox Health reports are not just raw data. The team at SciFox created a unique scoring system called the Axes of Wellness that spans different health and lifestyle categories such as inflammation, metabolic, and cardiovascular health. With this, they take the guesswork out of interpreting your results and empower you with actionable insights to improve your wellness. You can view your results in a secure dashboard, and they even include personalized recommendations. So the way it works is you order your kit and it's mailed to your home. You open the kit and simply follow the instructions. If you're a new user, you create an account and you supply just a few drops of blood and mail it back in a prepaid envelope. Voila, you get your results in a few days. It's really that simple. You don't have to drive anywhere, call the doctor's office repeatedly to get results, and it's affordable. And then you have the data at your fingertips that can help you develop an actionable plan. I've already completed my first testing kit, and I definitely got some insights from my results, and it was easy, convenient, and fast. SciFox Health is the easiest, most affordable way to routinely check your blood biomarkers and stay on top of your health. I'm so excited to be working with SciFox Health. Visit scifoxhealth.com/yami to get 20% off to test your blood at home and begin working toward a healthier you. That's scifoxhealth.com/yami. Why does it seem so hard to start a healthy habit? You know you desperately want to eat more home-cooked meals, but you are struggling to get the routine going. It's a lot to do. You have to pick the recipes, then make an ingredient list, then shop for the ingredients, and finally follow a sometimes complicated set of instructions, all while you're tired and distracted. And to make things even more complicated, back to school season is upon us and the household routine is about to change again. With so much to do on a regular basis, it can be really difficult to stay consistent. If you are ready to make your life more efficient, spacious, and healthy, consider using a meal kit service. I recommend Green Chef. Green Chef is a number one meal kit for eating well, delivering pre-portioned and prepped quality whole foods with limited processed ingredients. Green Chef sends organic, fresh produce and chef designed recipes in every box for satisfying, nourishing and convenient meals that make it easy to stick to a healthy living routine. Find recipes for every lifestyle, including plant-based diets. Green Chef delivers quality whole foods, including low added sugar and sodium smart options. You get to choose from 80 plus flavor-packed options that allow you to take back time in the kitchen with dinner ready in 30 minutes and lunch in 10. Try 15 plus new recipes every week. Here's the best part. Green Chef delivers everything you need to make convenient, wholesome, and delicious meals directly to your doorstep. Each meal kit includes pre-measured ingredients, as well as some produce that comes already pre-chopped, as well as custom sauces that are pre-made in-house. They also provide recipe cards, and the meals are very simple to make. It's a delicious, fresh, home-cooked meal without the hassle. Green Chef takes the stress out of cooking. The recipes are easy to follow and everything you need is included, so even less experienced cooks in your house can prepare a delicious home-cooked meal. I appreciate the variety of vegan and gluten-free meals available, like Caribbean cauliflower bowls with coconut rice and portobello steak salad with creamy chimichurri. You won't get bored with these meals, but they are also simple enough to cook in a hurry. The vegan meal kits are hearty, so you don't have to worry that you'll go hungry. They use ingredients like tempeh and tofu so that you feel full and energized. We have loved using Green Chef in our household. If you want fresh, home-cooked, healthy meals to put on the table, look no further than Green Chef. And now, take your healthy routine further with 2 times the support. You get to select from Green Chef's healthiest menu ever and access thousands of top-rated gyms and fitness studios worldwide from ClassPass. For a limited time, new Green Chef subscribers will also receive 50 free credits to use ClassPass, about a month's worth of membership. Go to greenchef.com/IamHumanClass for 50% off your first box plus 50 free credits with ClassPass. That's code IamHumanClass at greenchef.com/IamHumanClass to get 50% off your first box plus 50 free ClassPass credits. Green Chef, the number one meal kit for eating well.
Where it gets a little bit interesting is you kind of can imagine those two, there's two main pathways for omega-3 and omega-6 fatty acids. And they both start, you know, with their primary short chain fatty acid, again, alpha linolenic for omega-3 and linolenic for omega-6. And as that pathway elongates and desaturates into the longer chain fatty acids like EPA and DHA for omega-3 and arachidonic acid for omega-6, they competitively compete for the enzyme that actually moves those fatty acids down that kind of pathway or cascade. So that's where the talk about ratios comes in. In other words, is our ratio of one fatty acid too high and can that affect the incorporation of the other one? And there's a little bit of evidence to suggest that because our diets are so heavy in omega-6 fatty acids that we may not be able to have the omega-3 fatty acid pathway do its job because there's such a high amount of omega-6 in the diet. And most researchers recommend a ratio of about 4 to 1, 4 being omega-6, 1 being omega-3. And the typical standard American diet is around 25 to 1. So it's quite high. So wow. Yeah, again, going back to processed foods and heavy reliance on animal products, you know, gets us into this challenge in terms of essential fatty acids. So when these pathways kind of conclude, they get down to the EPA and DHA level, they produce eicosanoids, which are really powerful, potent molecules, in most cases, anti-inflammatory on the omega-3 side. So we have thromboxanes, cyclooxygenases, prostaglandins, and those will also compete with the omega-6 chain, which produces arachidonic acid, which is pro-inflammatory. So that's kind of where the belief is about why it's important to take omega-3 fatty acids or have decent levels. But here's the thing. When you have omega-6 fatty acids go down the pathway, very little of it ends up as arachidonic acid. Just like on the omega-3 side, very little of alpha-linolenic acid ends up getting down to the EPA DHA level. And there's probably good biological reasons for that. And most people, or most scientists, just focus on the omega-3 pathway as being kind of inefficient. Or a slow conversion rate, but it's exactly the same thing that happens with omega-6 fatty acids as well. And I think this is really kind of intelligent design by nature to kind of keep these competing fatty acids in check, because we don't want to bleed too much and we don't want to bleed too little. We want to definitely have an inflammation process. When we get cut or injured, we want our inflammatory process to do the job that they're intended to do. And so there's some research that says too much omega-3 could be inhibiting that pathway, which is why the FDA, when they made their guidelines for essential fatty acids, they recommended don't go over 3 grams of long-chain fatty acids, because you could extend your bleeding time. This is why the military is also looking at what happens with soldiers in combat. They don't want bleeding time to be extended for obvious reasons. And it's why if you go for surgery at the hospital, one of the first questions they're going to ask you is, are you on fish oil supplements? You probably want to go off those, because we don't want excess bleeding time to occur. And as Dr. McDougall once said, you know, if you're in a car accident, you want your inflammation process to function properly. You don't want excessive bleeding time. So we've also seen increased risk with, you know, large amounts of omega-3 fatty acids. So, you know, this is something to keep in mind because there's such a push and such a strong recommendation for omega-3 fatty acids. But the research, like I said, has not really panned out from a cardiovascular disease standpoint. And I can talk about eye as well as brain too, because the main reservoirs of long chain omega-3 fatty acids are the brain and the eye. So it's not just cardiovascular disease, but also eye problems. And so, you know, with respect to eye problems, we look at things like cataracts and dry eye disease and age-related macular degeneration. And the supplement studies that gave fish oil supplements were largely unsuccessful, even long-term studies. So again, no significant improvement or benefit to taking fish oil supplements for the eye. And the same goes for the brain as well. Several systematic reviews have looked into this. There's been enough research. I mean, adults who have no cognitive impairment or those with Alzheimer's disease, no benefit. Possible some little minor benefit for those that are mildly cognitively impaired, but there's also some increased risk with fish oil supplements in terms of neurobehavioral abnormalities. And again, this is related to mercury intake. Vegetables, fruits and vegetables, strongly protective for cognitive decline and dementia, by the way. So that's a little bit about some of the different areas of investigation that have looked at things like DHA.
Yeah, that's a lot of information. So for our plant-based eaters, some people have recommended getting these omega-3 levels checked, and then some people find that they're, quote, low. But you brought something up that was really interesting when we were sending information back and forth, in that this might be part of the way that it works, because for some plant-based people, their omega-6 intake is also low. So can you explain that a little bit of why that might happen, and also maybe clarify with these lab tests that are available to get your omega-3 levels checked, what are those standards based on? Should plant-based eaters even look at those and pay attention to those? What would be your thoughts on that?
Sure. Yeah, great question. So particularly in the plant-based community, you know, vegan and vegetarian diets, they tend to have more omega-6 intakes than omnivores. And as I was talking a little bit more earlier, you know, because of the selective competition between omega-3 and omega-6 fatty acids for metabolizing the downstream products, there could be some effect from high doses of omega-6. That said, the first enzyme that competes, which is called the delta-6 desaturase enzyme, has a distinct affinity for omega-3. So even though, you know, there is competition, it's much less competition because the body favors omega-3 over omega-6. So that's something to consider. But the high intakes of omega-6, I do think are probably pose a problem in terms of omega-3 incorporation. And a lot of the omega-6 fatty acids come from things like processed foods that are rich in vegetable oil. So, you know, it's just another reason to try to minimize your intake of processed foods. We have so much research documenting the deleterious effects. Well, there's just one more. And the other thing about, you asked about, you know, getting tested, there really isn't overt omega-3 or omega-6 fatty acid deficiencies in our population, which is one of the reasons why the government doesn't have strong recommendations to consume them in large amounts. And we only really found out, it was back in the late 70s and 80s with the invention of total parenteral nutrition, which is intravenous nutrition that's given to hospital patients that has zero fat in it. It's that at that point where we realize, you know, you can get deficiency states from not having enough omega-3 or omega-6 fatty acids in the diet. But again, our diet is, you know, it is replete. You know, it has sufficient amounts unless there are certain medical conditions that would prohibit it. So when we talk about testing, oftentimes it's erythrocytes or red blood cells or phospholipids that are investigated. And those are really also, you know, kind of a short-term marker because they're really good for only about 3 months of intake. And what we really want to look at is what's going on in our tissues. You know, how much omega-3 fatty acids, DHA, EPA is actually getting incorporated into our tissues and our brain, you know, where it really matters. Because you can devise all different types of studies to ramp up your omega-3 intake in your blood. But if little of that is being reached into the tissues, then that may be for naught. And the body has very clever, ingenious ways to maintain homeostasis. So you can feed participants alpha-linolenic omega-3 fatty acid for a month or so, and you may not see a boost in DHA at all. But if you keep them on that diet for like 3 months, there was a study in Japan that said DHA levels increased 20%. But they needed to be taking that amount of omega-3 fatty acid for 3 months. And when they went off it, those levels dropped right back down to what they were before they took supplementation, which means, I think, the body doesn't want large amounts of any particular fatty acid because it competes with other fatty acids and creates kind of an imbalance. So if we were to get tested, you'd really want to be tested in your adipose tissue, which is a great reservoir for essential fatty acids and other fatty acids. And there's a really interesting study that just came out a few years ago in the Adventist Health study, the Adventist Health 2 study, that actually took adipose samples in vegetarians, vegans, and omnivores. And what they found is, just to use vegans as an example, vegans who have no direct source of EPA or DHA long-chain fatty acids actually had like 12% of their adipose tissue comprised of DHA, which suggests that the body makes what it needs. So even if this is a pathway that's considered inefficient or slow conversion, it's probably exactly the way the body wants it. And so it's where the tissues are is where I think is where it matters. And again, there was no direct source of EPA or DHA in the diet of vegans. And the differences were not that less than omnivores in terms of DHA incorporation into adipose tissue. And they also had about the same EPA as well. So, you know, when I think about getting tested, and of course, patients are not going to go to their practitioner and ask for an adipose sample. So it's unlikely that that's going to happen, but it's useful in terms of research to help us understand that blood tests may not be really an accurate marker of what's going on in body tissues itself. So I know it's confusing. It took me 20 years to sort through all of the available research, and I'm still learning to this very day, but I hope, you know, listeners will understand that the body has a really, really great way of homeostasis and making sure that it takes what it needs. You know, another classic example is during pregnancy. This conversion rate of omega-3 fatty acids into EPA and DHA rapidly increases during pregnancy. Why? Because the body knows that it's going to need more, so it ramps up that pathway. Those of us that are not pregnant or women in older age, that conversion rate goes back to what the rest of the levels are. So I think the body knows exactly what it's doing. And if there's anybody that could benefit from greater omega-3 fatty acid, I think it's those who follow the standard American diet, because a lot of things can impact that conversion rate, like hydrogenated oils, trans fats, fatty foods, certain medical conditions like diabetes, for example, all can affect that pathway. So and the other thing that I wanted to mention is arachidonic acid, which is your end product for omega-6. You know, that's where the potent inflammation molecules come from. And the only place where arachidonic acid is taken in its direct form is through animal products. So dairy and meats are all contributors to the direct source of arachidonic acid. So I think it's really omnivores and those who follow the standard American diet who could benefit the most from reducing their arachidonic acid intake and perhaps increasing their omega-3 fatty acid intake. Because what does the research say in plant-based diets? Better cognition, less dementia, less eye diseases, and certainly less cardiovascular diseases. So if this pathway was inefficient, we would see diseases that have an inflammation component be greater in the vegetarian, vegan, plant-based communities. And it's actually the opposite. We have some of the lowest inflammation indicators like CRP, C-reactive protein, for example. So this adds to the general idea here that maybe the fishtail of omega-3 fatty acids is a little bit overblown in general.
I love that play on words. But what you're saying also is even us plant-based eaters, we can get into trouble by overdoing the omega-6 fatty acids in these processed foods that are high in fat, high in added oils, those kinds of things. So we also want to stay away from over-consuming those foods as well so that we don't have an imbalance. Well, my next question is, for those of us that are already supplementing with algal oil supplements, and for me, particularly what I'm interested is in the longevity benefits. There's many longevity experts that are hardcore omega-3 advocates. How should we move forward? How should we evaluate this? For the algal oil, do we have enough evidence that supplementing with algal oil, which we know isn't going to have that heavy metal contamination, are there detriments there? Should we wait a while, see what the research shows? Should we stop? How should we progress with this?
Great question. So, I mean, anybody, including the plant-based diet followers, can take an algae supplement. And several studies have shown that that will increase your EPA and DHA temporarily in the blood. But again, there's no outcome that says that this is actually having an effect on where it matters, or outcomes in terms of cardiovascular disease risk reduction. And several studies actually with algae supplements have shown to increase LDL cholesterol, which is a major risk factor for atherosclerosis. So you're seemingly taking an algae supplement to reduce your cardiovascular disease, but you're actually getting a risk factor in exchange. So again, I don't think the body really is asking to take in large amounts of any kind of oil. Remember, whether it's an algae oil or a fish oil capsule, these are all refined oils. And as Dr. McDougall had once mentioned to me, no refined oil is really good for your endothelial lining, you know, and so in your veins and arteries. This is all how atherosclerosis can start. So we don't really want, you know, refined oils really of any sort. So that's one thing to consider. Longevity studies, certainly there's several studies. There's a Framington Health study that came out a few years ago that determined that the concentrations of EPA and DHA in your red blood cells correlated with less mortality. But again, the Cochrane systematic analysis says that when you look at all the studies taken together, there's no significant benefit. And as we pointed out, significant risks are available with fish oil supplements. So I don't think that longevity really is being enhanced by omega-3 fatty acid supplementation. And, you know, what I really think is happening is it's a replacement factor. You know, those that have higher levels of omega-3 fatty acids, those are people that are taking or pursuing the Mediterranean diet, for example. There's all these other things that are coming along for the ride that are very healthy. And so omega-3 may just be simply a marker of a healthy lifestyle rather than it in itself reducing mortality and increasing longevity. The best way to increase longevity, as the Adventist health studies showed, is to follow a whole food plant-based diet. You know, what are the six blue zones around the world? What do they have in common? They mostly consume a plant-based whole foods diet. And you can add 6 to 8 years to your life by following those and other healthy lifestyle habits that have been identified in the blue zones.
Well, and I'll add one from my husband that he'd be happy. They're not cheap. So especially when you're going for, you know, a particular brand or whatever, these supplements, as you said before, there are people benefiting from selling them and they've become a large market and they're not inexpensive. So over years and years of supplementing with these, if we don't really need them, if they're not really helping us, and in some cases could potentially be harming us, we could save quite a bit of money in avoiding taking these supplements and instead just focusing on eating whole foods, a variety of whole plant foods, particularly, and get those benefits.
Something that supplement makers will not be happy to hear, by the way.
No.
It's not welcome news to them, for sure. Yeah, it is very expensive and it's a massive industry. And I'm on a newsletter that I get every couple weeks of the nutrition industry. What is the industry focusing on? What types of new ingredients and formulations are they looking at? And omega-3 continues to be looked at, as well as probiotics, for example. The microbiome is very big right now. And so rather than have a healthy microbiome or a healthy gut through a whole food plant-based diet and minimal processed foods, supplement companies want to convince us that the better route is to simply take a pill. You know, and that's the, you know, the paradigm that we're in terms of our healthcare system, is that, and patients demand this as well. We don't want to come home empty-handed. We don't want to be told to change our lifestyle, but we do want to have a pill that we can take and maintain a certain health lifestyle that got us into that unhealthy situation in the first place. So it's a really kind of circuitous self-feeding mechanism with the supplement industries. And so many studies looking at all types of supplements have come out over and over again. There's limited benefit to taking vitamin supplements in general, and several studies that show increased harm. So it's really hard to argue with a whole foods plant-based diet, period.
Very well said, Dr. Radek. Well, we've spent all of the time on omega-3, and I want to make sure that I get to some of these questions. So we'll save vitamin D for another podcast episode. So I would love to hear, what do you wish more people knew?
Really what I just got done kind of talking about, which is supplements are just, for the most part, not necessary. The only exception is vitamin B12. That's the only exception that I can make. And we used to get vitamin B12 from bacteria that was present on vegetables and fruits. It was in water, in streams, and we have a completely different, you know, lifestyle. It's kind of an industrialized life cycle, lifestyle, if you will. So those are not enabled, you know, to be good sources of B12. So, you know, vitamin B12 is not something to mess around with. So we want to ensure that we have adequate amounts. And as you age, the ability to absorb B12 in the gut is reduced via intrinsic factors. So elderly should be definitely taking a vitamin B12 supplement. And the studies looking at plant-based diets, you know, we shouldn't see any deficiency whatsoever, yet we still see this. And a lot of people choose plant-based diets for a variety of reasons, not just health reasons. There's ethical reasons, there's animal rights reasons, and they may not have health as their main focus. And sometimes those are the individuals who could benefit the most from taking a vitamin B12 supplement. So long story short, what I wish, you know, most people would help understand is there really isn't a need to buy expensive vitamin supplements when we can get these things through a proper diet. And we could do ourselves a great deal of favor in our purse and pocketbook as well.
How do you define success in this lifetime?
I think it's finding something that you're good at and something that you're passionate about. And hopefully it's something that also does good. And so my personal journey was one where I started out in the corporate world. I was a businessman, you know, in the business world. And eventually through a hard analysis about what I want to do in life and what I want to be successful at led me to look at public health and eventually plant-based diets for chronic disease risk reduction. So I define success as, you know, finding what you're good at, what you're passionate about, and then hitting it hard. You know, don't let anything get in the way. And that's just one aspect of success. There's probably 30 others, you know, having close relationships with your family. I wasn't a fan of my family in my adolescence. I wanted to run away and go as far as I can all over the planet. And then I realized that family is where it's at. Having good social connections with your family and social connections in general help lead to having a good mental state and also can help with that success definition too.
I love that. Great advice. Thanks. Is there a goal or a dream that has evaded you thus far? Or is there something you have left on your bucket list that you'd be willing to share with us?
And probably this isn't the best way to answer this, but I really feel I'm living the dream. You know, I've worked really hard in taking a close look at what I want to do with my life. And that eventually resulted in making a difference in other people's lives, you know, showing the evidence. What does the research say? How to diffuse and condense research to make it more understandable. I mean, we're filled with so many different angles of this research says this, but this one says, no, don't do that, or you should do 10 times more of this. And it's incredibly difficult for consumers to navigate the nutrition and health world. And even within health professionals themselves, because there's marketing, because there's lobbyists, particularly in my field as a dietitian, we're bombarded with companies trying to convince us that their product is good on the dinner plate or the plate itself, when a lot of times these products are processed and should have no place on the plate whatsoever. So we're all learning. It's sometimes two steps back, one steps forward. But, you know, I feel I'm at the place where I'm supposed to be, and I love what I'm doing. And so, you know, the only dream, I guess, would be to, you know, do even more of that. But I only have 24 hours in one day, so.
Well, that makes me so happy. And I love to hear that, because ultimately, that's what we all want, right? To be content with what we're doing, feel like we're fulfilled, we're helping others, we're enjoying our lives, and that we feel good physically in our bodies. And it sounds like you're hitting all those aspects. So congrats. I'm very happy for you. And thank you for spreading that joy.
Thank you. You know, one thing that I just wanted to mention about that, I was just talking to one of my good friends who is kind of having some health effects. And, you know, one of the things I reminded him is that no matter what you're striving for, you know, whatever you're passionate about, if you don't have good health, that is an impediment towards reaching those goals. So, you know, health should be core number one. We don't teach it adequately in junior high school. We don't teach it adequately in high school. And we don't even teach it well at college, as identified by some of the university student diets. And so, you know, if you really want to maximize and be optimal at whatever it is that you're striving to be or become, we've got to have health as one of those core tenets to make sure that you excel and have all that energy and good frame of mind to be able to accomplish what you're setting out to do. So just wanted to add that as well.
Yeah, I support that 100%. And I would add to it health and well-being, because I feel like that term well-being is easier for people to understand. Health can be so like objective and be like, okay, you have a health problem or you have this disease, but sometimes people don't have a diagnosis, but they just don't feel good. They're tired, they're low energy, they're not sleeping well, their tummy hurts all the time. I say tummy because I'm a pediatrician, so have abdominal pain, whatever. But they may not actually have a diagnosis, like a health, quote, problem, but they know they don't feel well. And whenever you don't feel good, It's a distraction. You don't have that energy to devote to a purpose or a passion. You can only focus on how can I feel better? How can I just get myself through the day? You don't have that ability to be creative and to just spread and radiate your joy. So yeah. I agree with you 100% that that's like our number one thing that we should protect. And we should always, you know, we think that it's selfish, but it's not, because the more we take care of ourselves and we protect our health and well-being, actually, the more we can share with the world. So we're actually being of service when we're taking care of ourselves.
I couldn't agree more. And if you talk to most folks on the street and you say, what is health? You know, they're going to say, well, it means I don't have a disease. Health is not merely the absence of disease. There's so many more factors, as you just listed, that make up overall good health. And it's just not, you know, I don't have a disease, so I should be in good health. There's so many other players. The American College of Lifestyle Medicine knows this very well, with six distinct pillars that comprise, you know, health and wellness. So it's so much more than just the absence of disease. So yeah, I couldn't agree more.
That. Well, what does it mean to be human?
You know, for me personally, it means to be open and available to everything that life has to offer. You know, said another way or in reverse, it means not limiting my viewpoint, expanding my viewpoint, being open to different ways of life and perspectives and thoughts and judgments that others may have that you may or may not agree with. That sense of openness and empathy, and empathy not just for our other human beings that populate our planet, but empathy for all the other creatures that inhabit and are just doing what they're doing to live out their life, hopefully in a natural way, is what I think really is kind of what makes us the most human. You know, I think of Maslow's hierarchy of needs and self-actualization. And what I put at the top of that pyramid is having this wide scope understanding and appreciation for everything that life has to offer. And, you know, most of us we're in four walls, you know, which is one of the things I was going to mention about vitamin D levels is that the way we live our lives today, it's very enclosed and limited. And we're not getting enough sunlight, and we're fearful of sunlight, so our vitamin D levels are insufficient, so on and so forth. And so I think my biggest strength, I think, as I've lived in my adult life has been make myself accessible and available to life itself. Try not to be fearful of the unknown. The unknown does not always mean something bad is going to happen. I know that the proverbial tiger could be around the corner and be chasing us. So we may be fearful of looking around the corner, but we don't live in a world like that today. I could make a case for gun violence, however, but in general, you know, being open and accessible and not fearful of what life has to offer. Life's a beautiful, amazing thing. We should all count our blessings that we take breaths in life each day, and we don't spend enough time thinking about and reflecting about those things. So that's my take on what I think it means to be human.
Oh, I love that. And I wholeheartedly agree that we're here to experience, we're here to explore, and we should take advantage of that. And I love the way you put it, being open to all that has to offer, not necessarily forcing it on a day-to-day basis, but allowing it to be there, allowing it to come, and being brave enough to take that step forward and be like, yes, I want to embrace this. I want to try this out, go down this new path I haven't gone down before, try new things out. I love that. That's beautiful.
As a doctor, as a pediatrician, you know, if we need any evidence of this or we need help seeing this, just look at a little kid. You know, look at that sense of curiosity, look at that sense of adventure and that, you know, sense of play. You know, it's an adage that we adults need to be more like our childhood. And there's actually some, I think, some good support behind that belief system. You know, we all need to take it a little step down sometimes. Life seems so stressful and we're so analytical and so focused inside our heads. We need to drop that a little bit and just kind of exist. Maybe that's what it means to be human, right?
Exactly. Stop taking it so seriously. Yeah. Because kids, they play and they do intense things, but they're not approaching it the way we do as adults, which we have to reach a certain goal or we have to succeed in a certain way. They're just playing. They're just like, I want to see if I could do this. You know, they're just curious. Like you said, the curiosity. So maybe reframing life is like being curious about things and not necessarily as a barometer for our worthiness or accomplishments, which is what we tend to do as adults.
Well,
Dr. Radek, this has been a fantastic conversation. Such a pleasure. You have a wealth of knowledge and information to share with us. And I'm so glad that you have shed some insight on this whole omega-3 issue. So I'm definitely going to be reconsidering my supplementation regimen moving forward. I would love for you to share with us where listeners can connect with you if they'd like to learn more from you.
Well, first, let me thank you for taking, you know, having the opportunity to talk to you, Dr. Yami, about, you know, what I feel is really important topics. You know, we have a lot of information here that could actually help people in their journey, you know, towards maintaining and keeping optimal health. So I'm really, really glad to be part of your awesome podcast. So thank you again for that. And where can your audience reach me? You can just Google my name, Tim Radak, R-A-D-A-K, and you'll find my website. And there's a button if you want to send questions or comments or anything like that. I'm more than happy to field anything from anybody in your audience. So just Google Tim Radak and you'll find my website.
Awesome. Well, Dr. Radak, thank you again so much for everything, for all the work you've done with all these decades of study that you've put into these topics. I really appreciate it. And thank you also for sharing about yourself and some of these nuggets of wisdom. I really appreciate it. And I hope that you have a very plantastic day.
My pleasure, and yourself too, Dr. Yami. Thank you again so much. My name is Tim Radak, and I am human.
Thank you for listening to another episode of I Am Human. I would be so honored if you subscribe to the podcast so that you never miss an episode. We love our listeners and take your feedback seriously. If you have questions or constructive feedback, you can email us at podcast@dryami.com. That's podcast@dryami.com. I am your host, Dr. Yami Cazorla Lancaster. I Am Human is produced by myself and Alejandra Parra. Graphics designed by Alejandra Parra. Music by Angela Sof with Glowbox Productions and edited by the Castos production team. Remember, human, you are here for a reason. Have fun, explore, and live your life to the fullest.
Vitality starts with a healthy heart. Superbeats Heart Chews by Human are plant-based chews with clinically studied grape seed extract to help promote normal blood pressure nearly 2 times more effectively than diet and exercise alone. Superbeats is rooted in science for quality and efficacy. So do something good for your heart. Superbeats Heart Chews support healthy circulation, so you not only get blood pressure support, but also heart-healthy energy. Superbeats is the number one doctor, pharmacist, and cardiologist recommended beat brand for cardiovascular health support. And it's loved by customers with over 40,000 five-star ratings and reviews. Are you ready to support your blood pressure and overall heart health? Get your Superbeats Heart Chews today. For a limited time, you can enjoy 15% off and free 30-day supply in bundles by visiting superbeatsdaily.com and using promo code SUPER. That's SUPER, B-E-E-T-S daily.com. Promo code SUPER to redeem your 15% discount.
Here in America, work is in trouble. We've offshored our manufacturing, sent away good jobs, and lost so much ability to make things. American Giant is pushing back against that tide. They make high-quality clothing for a summer wardrobe you'll love, all made right here in the USA. Support America's workers and get 20% off your first order at American-Giant.com with code STAPLE20. That's 20% off your first order at American-Giant.com, code STAPLE20.